is the End User, episode 113 for Friday, October 26th, InfiniPad. Hello and welcome to the End User, a show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am standing podcast expert, Taylor Marr.
Ah, yes, you've got a new desk configuration.
Yeah, I got a standing laptop desk. It's just basically a regular laptop desk that I bolted to the wall at standing height.
Cool. So, how do you like it so far?
I like it pretty well. It makes it feel all official. like I'm giving a speech or a symposium or something.
Yeah, it's like a podium, yeah. But you're speaking to the internet at large here.
Much bigger audience, potentially.
Potentially.
Mostly time shifted.
Also, it's not like we had a busy week here or anything, right?
Well, I had a very exciting week. Every time there is an Apple product announcement, and my favorite types of Apple product announcements are the one where they live stream the keynote itself, which they did this week. First time in a couple of years they've done it.
Yeah, but you couldn't get it on Windows. What's up with that?
I don't know. That's your problem, man.
They had it on the iPhone. They had it on OS X. They had it everywhere.
I was watching this one on an Apple TV.
Yeah, and they had it on Apple TV.
Natively.
But no Windows or Android, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I started it off just by going to apple.com, and I opened it up. So if it worked from the website, I don't understand why it wouldn't work from the Windows computer on the website.
Yeah, it should work on the website. Well, anyway, I didn't watch it, so I can't really comment as to whether it did or did not work.
So as we predicted last week, and as much of the internet has been predicting for months, they released a new iPad mini, and it is 7.9 inches. It's got the old non-Retina screen resolution of 1024 by 768. It only weighs like half a pound. It comes in the same capacities and Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi plus LTE, and it starts at $329, which is probably higher than most people were expecting, but it sounds about right for Apple to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Apple does, right? They make premium products and they cost premium prices. The one exception that they've had is the iPhone, because it's been subsidized. That's really the only place where they do that.
Right. Yeah, not only is it subsidized, but they basically set the market price.
Yeah, they did. They set the standard. So what do you think about this compared to the Nexus 7?
Well, I mean, I haven't held either one in my hand. Apple made a really big case during the keynote saying that even though the screens were roughly the same size, the iPad was able to do a lot more with its screen format than the Nexus 7 or the Amazon Fire. And the idea being that they have the same resolution as the old iPad, so you get all of the same apps, and then those apps, they have more apps that are specifically designed for an iPad, so it takes better use of the display. But I did notice that they didn't even bother trying to show what movies would look like, either on its own or in comparison to the Nexus 7, which is, of course, a widescreen tablet versus the iPad mini, which isn't.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the weak point there, is if you were using this thing to primarily consume movies, which I wouldn't imagine you would use a 7-inch tablet for, by the way, then that would be kind of a problem, because you'd get bars in a way that you wouldn't on the Nexus 7. But you want to watch movies on the bigger tablet, right? You don't want to watch movies on a 7-inch tablet, do you?
I don't know. I don't think it makes that much of a difference. Imagine you're on a cramped plane or a bus and you want to watch a movie. I would probably rather take the mini than the full size.
Yeah, maybe. What I really want to watch movies on is my TV. That's. but if I was forced to do it on a tablet, I think I'd want the bigger one.
Yes, but everyone hates it when you take that TV with you traveling, Chris.
Yes, it's hard to watch my 42-inch TV on the metro, on the train.
We told you to stop bringing it. There's no outlets. It's just not going to work.
I'm sure you've seen the pictures of the guy who sets up a desktop computer at, like, Starbucks.
I've seen the pictures, yes. The iMac guy.
I want to recreate that, but with a large television. Uh-huh. Maybe 60 inches or something like that.
Nice.
That would be excellent.
Well, that guy would have a much easier time setting up his iMac in a Panera or whatever if he got the brand new iMac. It's much lighter and thinner, and they went ahead and pulled out the optical drive. I mean, really, from a technical standpoint, it's not all that much different than the old Mac Mini, but it certainly looks much cooler.
Yeah, it really looks stunning. I mean, the design here and how thin it is really nice. I mean, it's something that's going to sit on your desk, so it almost doesn't matter quite as much. But this is the first time I've seen an iMac and really had some kind of reaction to it.
Really? The first time?
Yeah, I don't know. I never really liked all-in-one computers.
What if, but this one does something for you.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Mm. Well, that's interesting.
I still think it's a bad idea.
I think that this one is an excellent iteration. Although, if you can possibly hold out for the Retina display iMac, which may not come along for another year or two, that would be a pretty cool thing. I'll tell you what I really want to see next, which they didn't announce today, would be the Apple Thunderbolt display version of the iMac.
Yeah, now that
where the whole thing is just 5 millimeters thick, that'd be pretty cool.
Now we're talking.
Right.
Now, well, what bothers me about all-in-ones like this is that, well, what if you want to upgrade your monitor?
You just plug in a second monitor.
Yeah, I suppose. What would be kind of slick is to have this iMac in the middle and then two displays off to your left and right with three displays total. That would be kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, people do that. Now, another new technology that they announced for the iMac is the so-called Fusion Drive. This is a hybrid hard drive and solid-state disk drive. We've talked about these before, where you have, you know, a small solid-state disk to supplement a larger traditional hard drive. And there are already several different ways of implementing that, but Apple decided to go with a whole new thing that they're calling Fusion.
Right. So, and this was confusing to me at first. I had to look a few things up to kind of figure out what was going on here. So as I see it, there's three ways of doing this. There's the SSD as a operating system disk, where you install the operating system to the disk and you get the performance there, and then you put all of your large data on a second spinning disk, which is
slower. That would be the easiest way to build your own hybrid system.
Right. And then there's the Intel rapid storage technology way of doing it, where you have a caching SSD in front of the hard drive so that you get, like, for example, the Ultrabook I just got, the Acer S3, has a 20 gig caching SSD. And it copies files that you use often to the SSD and then reads them from the SSD if they're available. And then the Fusion actually copies the primary file to the SSD and then reads it off of the SSD instead of copying over the file to the drive. It actually keeps the file on the SSD. So that's a little bit different.
So instead of duplicating crucial pieces of the drive,
right,
it extends the drive, and then you only have your file in one place or the other.
Right. So you actually do take on the extra 128 gigs of storage that you have, since
right,
it's not duplicating information. So
now, Apple hasn't released the technical details of this Fusion Drive yet, but they have indicated that it probably works pretty similar to a way that enterprise multiple hard drive solutions work. There have been expensive enterprise level software solutions for years already that manage files between slower hard drives, faster hard drives, solid state drives, depending on the level of use that they get. And this is just implementing it inside one computer. But then there is one more version of a hybrid hard drive that we haven't mentioned yet. And that's the solutions like Seagate's hybrid drive, where you have a solid state drive, a very small solid state drive, and a hard drive inside one component.
Right, inside one actual connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because
these tend to be the cheapest solution, but then it doesn't have the level of performance that the other ones do.
Yeah, so this is interesting. We'll have to see when a non-tech does a review or something, because it's really hard to know, you know, if this is better or more convenient in some way. It's kind of hard to tell with the information that's out there. So we'll have to wait for the benchmarks to come out.
Well, we won't see those iMacs until mid to late November and even December for the 27-inch version of the iMac. But you can actually already get the new Fusion Drive in the Mac Mini, which was also updated this week. They just basically added the new processor, and then they gave the Fusion Drive option, and that's it.
That's cool. So can you put your own SSD in here and use Fusion Drive? Do we know that?
In either one?
Yeah, like, could you... could you get in there and replace the hard drive and be okay with that?
We don't know that, and I can almost guarantee that that wouldn't work out of the box, but someone may find some sort of solution for that once we understand the technology a little bit better.
Yeah, because I'm imagining putting taking out the default SSD and putting in a larger SSD and see if that works or not. So I don't know. We'll have to see. It's not out yet, so we can't do it, and we can't ask people who have bought the new machine what's going on. So we'll have to wait and see.
Right. But if someone were to get that Mac Mini, they could today get a Mac Mini with a Fusion Drive.
So now, are they positioning this as a server now?
Which, the Mac Mini?
Yes.
Well, they've been selling a server version with a quad-core chip in it for 2 years already.
Right, but do they still have both?
Yes, they do still have a regular consumer version and a server version.
Right, okay. So because this has classically been a pretty decent home theater PC. In fact, you have some solution like that.
Well, I have. It's not a decent home theater PC since it's the first generation PowerPC G4 Mac Mini. It can't do any HD video of any kind, but it can't do YouTube, but it can browse and it can play SD iTunes videos. Right. Or QuickTime videos.
But these newer ones are more powerful. They can do
well, yeah. I mean,
all the things you just mentioned, the newer ones will do at least.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is all I'm advising is don't buy a 7-year-old computer.
I'm not
sure. That only costs $500 at the time and expect it to run HD video.
Yeah, I'm not sure you could even buy one. They must be out on eBay, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they're around. I mean, I'd sell you mine. So, but there was one more Mac announced this week, and it's the one that I'm the most excited about. It is a 13-inch version of the Retina MacBook Pro.
Yeah, so
the resolution on this is essentially the same as a 30-inch desktop LCD display. It's 2560 by 1600. That's a 30-inch display on a 13-inch notebook.
Yeah, and that's just awesome. So do you know the pixels per inch there?
It is about 227, I think. I'm not sure if I have that off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm looking at it now. It is 227 pixels per inch. So that's pretty good. What did Apple say Retina was?
It's right on par with the 15 inch. It's actually a little bit higher.
But the spec for Retina is higher than that, isn't it?
Well, we've talked about this on the show before. Apple has decided to implement a flexible scale for the Retina term.
a loose standard.
Yeah, well, it's not loose. It's just depending on the average distance from the eyeballs to the screen.
That's right. Yeah, and you hold your phone closer to your face, therefore the resolution has to be more dense.
Right. So the way they've gone is above 320, that's Retina for phone. Above 260, that's Retina for iPad. And then above 220, that's Retina for MacBook Pro.
Yeah, and otherwise this thing looks exactly like you'd expect it to look. It looks nice.
Yeah, it's a tiny bit thicker than the 15-inch version, which itself was a tiny bit thicker than the MacBook Airs, but you get a lot more power out of that. Although this 13-inch version, it has no dedicated graphics card. It only has the built-in Intel HD 4000.
Right, yeah, the integrated graphics.
And it also has no quad-core option. So these are only dual-core and only integrated graphics. But you know what? That's good enough for me.
Wow.
And they are $500 cheaper than the 15-inch Retina MacBook.
So they start at $1,699.
8 gigs of RAM. That's all you get.
Yeah, well, eight gigs is...
You start with eight, you can't go any higher.
I mean, how can you... I know that this thing... Well, no, you can't really compare it to... some of the Ultrabooks. I guess you could, but this thing is more spec'd out than your typical Ultrabook. I bet you if you spec'd out an Ultrabook, it would start to get up there over $1,000. But darn, $1,699, that's pretty rough.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a screen that you're not going to find anywhere else. And if you were to build to order a 13-inch MacBook Air with similar specs, you'd come pretty close to that. You'd come to about $1,550 or $1,600.
Yeah. So You got to imagine that it comes out and it's expensive and the price will drop over time. So, and this is really their first foray into these this class of computers. So you got to expect the first attempt to be a little bit more expensive than it would be otherwise.
Well, I am really strongly considering getting one of these. I'm definitely going to wait for a deal. If I do, I'll either buy a refurbished one or maybe I'll wait till Best Buy has it on sale or something. Maybe there'll be a Black Friday discount.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe there will be.
But you know what this doesn't have? And you know, none of the Apple computers have this yet, but I would love to see a one more thing, and that is next generation Wi-Fi, 802.11ac.
Yeah, that's right. Well, really nobody has it right now. They've got, it's so young to start putting that into things now.
Right. So the people at iFixit, who are known for taking apart computers, putting them back together, and then showing you how to do the same, have already taken apart this new MacBook Pro, which is how we know so much about it, how it doesn't have a dedicated graphics card. But they have definitely made a few improvements already. The first generation, or the 15-inch version of the Retina MacBook, had a problem where the batteries were glued to the case with so much adhesive that if you tried to remove them, you'd puncture the battery and possibly cause a potential explosion. That problem has been largely fixed. They still use some glue, but the iFixit people reported that it was much easier to get out. Furthermore, there appears to be room inside the case for a full-size 2.5-inch hard drive or solid-state drive if you wanted to put it in.
And wouldn't that be a surprise if you're taking apart your laptop and then the battery explodes? That would not be fun.
No, that would not be fun at all. Basically, this is pretty close to the computer that I'm looking for. I'm going to wait to see what the benchmarks say and whether it's got all the power that I need, and then I'm going to wait for a deal, and then maybe I'll get one.
Yeah, it's got all the power you need, let me tell you. Just from looking at the chipset and all that, it's got it.
You're comfortable with built-in Intel graphics running a 30-inch display?
Yes, you'll be fine.
Comfortable with that?
You'll be fine. Unless you want to do some real crazy gaming on it.
Are you comfortable with that for 6 years?
Well, I don't know about that. That may be a limiting factor.
I have to consider the long term when I'm buying a new computer.
Right. since it's so darn expensive, right?
Right. Now, there was one more thing at this Apple event, and Apple went ahead and decided to just go ahead and update the full-size iPad 2, just 6 months after they released the iPad 3 with Retina display.
And this is puzzling to me, and I think you've got a pretty good reason that you'll elucidate in a second here, but it's just kind of bizarre. They upgraded the internals and said, okay, here you go, and it looks the same, and people seem to be upset, although, I mean, this is just what happens. You know, you have to move forward at some point. But so why do you think they did this?
Well, I think that they probably just wanted to refresh it with all of their latest technology. They made a bunch of adjustments with their component manufacturing. So they got their new ASICs processor, which is designed in-house as opposed to cribbing designs from someone else. Then they got their new Lightning connector. And then aside from that, the only thing they added was LTE support for more countries. But I think that A6 processor is nothing to sneeze at because, if you remember, there were reports of that third generation iPad was running pretty hot, especially if you were running games or movies or something. Just the amount of heat that it was kicking out. So since this is a next generation processor, it's much more energy efficient. And they've claimed actually that it gets an extra hour of battery life. So I'm expecting the heat levels to be much lower on this one as well. So I would say that this is a great time to buy a full-size iPad.
Yeah, well, I'd say if you have an iPad 3 or the new iPad, as they called it, I wouldn't imagine you would spend the money to upgrade. But if you're new to the iPad and you're looking to buy an iPad, I feel like this is a pretty good time because you know it's going to be around for a little while. And you know that it's going to perform really well with all of the applications that are on it. I think if you're new to the iPad game, then it's probably a good time to get in.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's kind of boring. Do you think the next one's going to be a big refresh?
I think the next one is just going to be a lot thinner. Maybe it'll have colors.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do from here?
I can't
here?
Imagine what else, yeah.
What do you do from here?
They've gone as minimal as they possibly could. It is a square of metal and glass with perfect resolution and amazing battery life and an awesome processor. I don't know what else you can do in there.
For this time next year, when the next iPad comes out, presumably, we don't really know that per se, but that seems to be what's going to happen here. Let me go on record and say they're going to have a thinner bezel and make a really big deal about it. That's my prediction.
Well, they made a pretty big deal about the thinner bezel on the iPad Mini.
Yeah, they did.
The only way that they could make a big deal about a thin bezel at this point is if they eliminate it completely. Wouldn't that be cool, though?
That would be cool. It would be like an Infinity iPad.
Right.
And they could call it Infinipad.
they probably wouldn't.
They probably should not do that.
The Dunder Mifflin Infinipad?
Yeah, so I think they're just upgrading the internals so that it'll last through newer games and stuff like that. It's really kind of boring.
Boring, but still a good purchase.
Yeah, I think so. I think
that's
so
the
well.
End user recommendation.
All right, does that, let's see, does that cover all of our Apple stuff?
That just about covers it.
I think it does. I can't believe just the dump of products that they had here. It's kind of incredible. Do you recall them announcing more products than that before?
The only thing I can think of that would really be comparable was when they switched their product line from IBM to Intel processors.
Yeah, that's true. That was a pretty big switch.
It wasn't until the next year they announced the iPhone.
Right, so that was in 06 and 07.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move away from the Apple news and almost non-news, but we've been talking about the Microsoft Surface and what's going on there and what are people's reactions, and they lifted the embargo for all of the reviews. So if you haven't been surfing out to the tech blogs recently and you're interested in the Surface, you'll definitely want to go see what everyone has to say about it. And all the reviews seem to be positive, but conservative about the huge change that is Windows 8. In this particular flavor, Windows 8 RT. And, you know, everybody's reviewed it, and it still has a fresh flavor, and everybody seems to kind of like it. I don't know. What was your reaction?
I don't really have much of a reaction. I mean, I want to try it out for myself, but I'm not putting too much stock in the reviews, except for David Pogue from the New York Times.
Yeah, what did he say?
Oh, he hated it.
Of course, he's a known Apple guy.
I wouldn't say he's really strongly an Apple guy. He's not Walt Mossberg. He's been very critical of Apple in the past, and I would say less so usually of Microsoft. But this time, he was not happy with the user experience.
Did he say why?
He did, but I didn't read the whole article.
Okay, well, maybe we'll have to go back and read that one. The one I'm linking to here in the show notes is from Wired, and it has a great animated GIF of Matt Honan breaking the Surface kickstand off. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's enjoyable.
So I don't know. I got to use it before I can say much else. So just head out to the blogs and read a review. And, you know, we've talked about it enough at this point, but I'll have to go actually use one at Best Buy or something. And I don't know, you know, see if it's worth the $4.99 to buy into this, or if, you know, there are some performance issues that have been talked about in a lot of the reviews. So I'll have to go use one and see what's going on.
Yeah, we'll both have to see.
All right. And with that, let's turn on the afterburners.
All right, starting with some more Microsoft news. Microsoft Office 2013 are available as of October 24th.
Yeah, that's right, on MSDN and TechNet for now. So
what's TechNet?
That's the testing channel for Microsoft products.
Uh-huh.
So these subscriptions are a little bit different, but basically you get the bits ahead of the general availability of the software. So one step along the road, it's, you know, of course it's finalized and it's out on MSDN and TechNet. If you're one of those people, go have a look.
Sounds good.
Now, more like the future, the Office web apps have been upgraded. What's up with that?
Well, they just made some tweaks in there, and the newest version has a cleaner look, more editing, formatting, and multi-user collaboration, and then also touch screen tools.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. They've really been evolving these web applications. They're starting to get pretty nice.
Yep. Now, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act has been updated. Apparently, the Librarian of Congress has the power to grant certain exemptions, which last 3 years, and they have now announced that jailbreaking your phone is legal under the DMCA exemption. However, tablets are not specified there, so that is still technically illegal.
Weird. Why tablets?
I don't know.
Or I should say, why not tablets?
Right.
Okay, well, that'll do it for our Afterburner section. So let's move on to the end user stories. I've got an interesting little link here from Hackaday, which is a great site if you've never been there. It's all about hardware hacks. And as you know, I kind of like to fiddle around with Arduino and some prototyping boards and stuff like that. And the Raspberry Pi folks have unsourced, is what I was about to say, and that would be incorrect. They've open sourced the driver for the CPU section of the Raspberry Pi. So the Raspberry Pi is almost completely open source. They still have the GPU section of the Raspberry Pi that's closed source. But it's interesting to see, you know, this is Broadcom doing this. So it's interesting to see some of this stuff start to get open source. So what do you think? Do you care about the Raspberry Pi?
And it makes sense for them to open source the design. I mean, originally it was designed as a learning tool, and the best way to learn is to be able to understand what's happening at the circuit level.
Yeah, well, no, it's just the CPU driver, not the CPU design, I think. So. It's just the software that it's running that they've open sourced.
That makes it a better education tool.
It gives me some hope that they're heading in that direction, that it'll be completely open source, just like Arduino is. Arduino is open source to the core. You can order the schematic, or you can download the schematic from Arduino and ship it off to China and make your own if you want. You know, that's the license, and that's how Arduino works. And you know, the thing about open source hardware that's interesting is that there's such a large barrier to entry that you can open source it without worrying about people just kind of ripping you off, because, you know, it's a lot of effort to ship something to China and get it made and that kind of thing. So you have a little buffer, where with software, you don't necessarily have that buffer, and people can just take the software and do whatever they want with it. So it's kind of interesting to see the open source model applied to hardware. And I think it fits a little better. Now, that said, I'm a fan of open source software, too. But I feel like it's a little easier to open source the design of hardware than it is for people trying to sell software.
Yeah, sure.
So now you found an interesting one related to the Raspberry Pi. There's a new breakout board that you can also get for this thing. It just breaks out all the pins that you can use to control lights and stuff like that, and makes it a little easier, makes it a little closer to the way Arduino does it. So
yeah, it lets you connect various other hardware and peripherals. It's really small, it's simple, it's got a great name. They're calling it the Pi Crust.
Pi Crust, that's brilliant. There's another one, the Raspberry Pi Cobbler, which also breaks out the pins to breadboard, but. I think the Raspberry Pi is here to stay, it's safe to say.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's great that it's developing a community. I kind of can't wait for there to be a lot more project instructions on the internet. I don't know if I would be comfortable, you know, making my own novel system for the Raspberry Pi to use, but I would love to be able to follow some instructions to turn a Raspberry Pi into, say, an AirPlay receiver over Wi-Fi for a TV that could just plug right into the back of the TV, and then you're done.
Yeah, and you can do that kind of thing. So
right. It's been done. They just haven't released the instructions yet.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't want to bore people too much with my own personal enthusiasm for the Raspberry Pi. So let's move on to you mentioned at the top of the show that you have a standing desk now.
Yeah, I'm standing right now. And it's a little bit hacky, but it was a very cheap solution. What I'm learning this week is that most people who have standing desks, they spend so much money on their standing desks because they are building an adjustable custom height desktop setup. So when you're standing, there's a lot more space between your hands and your screen. But I'm using a laptop for this, so it's a little bit of weird. The screen is a little bit lower than it should be, and the laptop keyboard is a lot higher than it should be. But I don't have to use it all the time. You know, this is just my home desk. The longest amount of time that I'm going to probably be using it on a regular basis is during this podcast. And so far, I'm feeling good.
Good. Your legs getting tired or?
No, legs are okay. Yeah, I've been good. Bouncing around this whole time.
Because it is supposed to be a lot healthier for you to have a standing desk. I mean, you sit in a chair and you're not burning any calories whatsoever. I mean, you know, you're burning some calories, but it's supposed to be a lot healthier in all aspects to use a standing desk. So
yeah, that was part of my motivation, and I've definitely read a lot about it. So reading a lot of articles on the internet was another piece of my motivation. But the two critical components here are I don't have that much room. I don't have that much space in my room here. And also, I didn't want to buy a chair.
Yeah, I guess it does save you on the chair, doesn't it?
Right. But I do have a couch, so I can sit on the couch whenever I want to change positions, or there's a sitting desk downstairs, or, you know, there's always the dining room table or anything like that.
So how long till you take the next step, the walking desk?
Ooh, see, if I don't have enough space for a chair, I probably have not nearly enough space for a treadmill.
Right.
So not until I live in a different house.
But would that be interesting to you?
No, not really at this point. But I mean, I've already taken the plunge into a standing desk. So maybe I'll just keep going from there. You know how some hobbies tend to consume you.
Yeah, that's true. I've been thinking about, you know, I've had this desk literally since childhood. It's just been a desk that my family has had. And it's pretty old at this point. So, and I just kind of inherited this desk. So I was thinking about upgrading my desk, and maybe I'll start to think about a standing desk, depending on how your experience goes with that. So we shall see.
Yep. Well, I will keep you informed.
All right. So let's get into the green tech story of the week, Mr. Marr. What you got for us?
All right. I'm really excited about this one because it seems like we're always talking about fuel and what to do. I've been following the election recently. I don't know if you noticed, but both candidates have seemed to give up on the idea that drilling for oil is bad. But I'm still under that impression. And so if we can find other ways to power our cars, that would be great. We've tried electric cars, but those aren't really catching on yet. Hybrid cars still use gasoline. So an English company named Air Fuel Synthesis has figured out a way to create gasoline or methane from air and also water.
That sounds like a scam, the Air Fuel Synthesis Company.
It does sort of sound like a scam, and they are definitely far from viable production of the amount of oil that a person would need to run a car, but they have been able to do it. Basically, what they do is they use carbon sequestration. So they pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and then combine it with hydrogen that they get from water. And then you combine the CO2 and the hydrogen, and that creates hydrocarbons. And that is exactly what gasoline is made from.
Yeah, so they're in the stage of testing viability here, right?
Right. But it's so crazy. And their whole plan here is that if you are pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and then turning it back into gasoline, which then goes back into the atmosphere, you are essentially creating a carbon neutral form of fuel.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see what amount of power it takes to do that conversion, because that's where these kinds of things always fall short.
That is true. But any fuel storage system, you know, whether it's a battery or gasoline or hydrogen, they are all just temporary storage solutions.
Yes,
and it's always going to take some amount of energy inefficiency to get the power into it and out of it.
Yeah, that's just the nature of it. The the one example I think of there was a grocery store that had speed bumps that the car would run over, and that would power the cash registers with the energy collected from that motion. And you just think like, okay, well, you're just making a car less efficient and stealing their energy, you know? So that's kind of the example that I always think of here. And the same kind of model applies here, but it doesn't really matter that it's inefficient, in some way if it still benefits you in other ways, right?
Right. Like the speed bump makes the car slow down, and then it prevents accidents.
Right. Yeah. If you were already going to have a speed bump, then it kind of makes sense to just steal that energy. But you just have to be careful not to put speed bumps in places where they wouldn't already be. Yes. To take this analogy to its death.
Yes. Let's not put speed bumps everywhere.
Right.
Or we could, and then I would design a speed bump proof car, and then I would be the only one who could drive normally.
Yeah, how would you make a speed bump proof car?
I would just have great suspension. I don't know. I don't have to figure it out yet, Chris.
I would make one that jumps. A jumping car, maybe not.
Go, go, gadget, jumping car.
All right, so that's our green story of the week.
And that brings us to our tip of the week.
It does. What you got for us? I still can't seem to get in a tip of the week, but you're on top of it like usual. What do we got here?
All right, so this is for iPhones and iPads, or iPod Touch if you have one of those. Now, this is a way to hide all of those built-in apps that you can't get rid of. Apple won't let you delete it, and they won't let you hide it, except you can put it into a folder or something. But here is a way to, without jailbreaking your phone, you can just wipe it from the home screen.
Cool. So we've got a link to the instructions on how to do that. And that's something that's really easily done on Android. And that's one of the frustrating things, I think, about iOS is that this kind of customization just doesn't happen in iOS. And, you know, I don't know, maybe they'll come up with an official way to do this over time. But if you want to do it in the meantime, we've got some instructions to show notes.
Right. The coolest thing is you actually just go to a website and then run a script on the website and then just go ahead and delete the app.
And you can get it back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's neat. So there there must be some vulnerability they're taking advantage of or something like that, right?
Yeah, there must be, and there's always the possibility that Apple's next update might break it. But, yeah. You know, if you really want to delete an app, do it right now. Don't wait. Just do it.
Yeah, do it before it's too late, before Apple fixes the loophole.
All right, and so that brings us to our final story of the week, the kicker.
The kicker!
Now, we are big fans of NASA and space missions, and we don't get a lot more shuttle news. In fact, there's nearly none from now on. All of them are retired and largely in their final resting places. But recently, the space shuttle Endeavour was flown across the country to Los Angeles. But then from its landing point, it had to be carried through neighborhood streets very carefully. And sometimes they had to move power lines or cars or houses or stuff. And but they've developed a time-lapse video of the whole journey. And so you can watch Endeavour's Mission 26.
Yeah, I'm watching it right now. It's pretty neat. The article we've got in the show notes, there's two videos, and one of them is on YouTube. And there's a copyright takedown notice from LA Times. But it's on Vimeo, I guess the official one, so. Yeah, really neat. So click through on the show notes. We've got the last link there, and you can watch this time lapse. It'll be one of the last news stories of the shuttle we're going to be talking about. So kind of sad, actually.
Yep, it's a little bit sad, but
SpaceX
Dragon is already on its way to manned space flight.
Yeah, and what was the Dragon Heavy, or what was it called?
I don't know.
Yeah, I forget what it called. It was Heavy something or other, and it was a great name for a rocket of some sort. All right, well, that will do it this week. We had some fantastic Apple news to talk about. It's always exciting when they launch a product because they really just really know how to do it, don't they?
They certainly do, yeah. And I love being able to watch it live, which was fun this week.
Yes.
And you can also watch it in podcast form.
Yes. So, Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you, how would they do so?
See, I already made the joke about Carl Sagan's contact. I can't do that one again. So if they wanted to contact me, I don't know, they could just call me or email me or Twitter me or Facebook.
Or Facebook. Do you want people out on the internet at large to start Facebooking?
No, but it wouldn't be that hard if they wanted to.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. So what's your Twitter handle?
It's at TaylorPhone.
Ah, there we go. Okay, and if you wanted to get a hold of me, I am at Chris Hale Barnes or chris@thedigitalmediazone.com. That would work too.
You mean for email?
Right.
I have a digitalmediazone.com email address, too. It's taylor@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Oh, I thought you were going to make everyone guess your email.
That would have been a sucker's game, Chris.
It wouldn't have been so hard. All right, well, let's get out of here. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a handful of other podcasts, so have a listen to Entertainment 2.0.
Congratulations on their 200th episode.
Congratulations, that's right. They live streamed their 200th episode, and it was fantastic. So you should go listen right now after I finish talking to the latest episode of Entertainment 2.0, number 200. It's a really good time. They had some old hosts on. They had every host on that they had ever had on Entertainment 2.0. It was a great time. So go have a listen.
How many hosts have they had?
A handful. You'll have to go listen to them.
Okay, I'll go listen.
You can also listen to Scene in HD and the Movie Podcast, of course. And if you'd like to leave us some feedback, you can do so at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. Together, we are at theenduser. Join us live every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We may be changing that next week. Stay tuned to our Twitter feed, and we will let you know when that's going to happen. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye. Bye.